Blog Talk Radio.
People look at you strange saying you changed, like you worked that hard to stay the same, like you're doing all this for a reason. And what happens most of the time, people change. People change around you because they start treating you different because of your success.
We the best music!
Another one.
Ever since the nigga hit the top, put the niggas want to see me in the box. They don't love you
no
more.
They don't love
you no more.
What's going on, everybody? Happy 2018. Happy New Year, or in some people's name, Merry New Year. If you guys remember the movie Trading Places, Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd, that's a good comedy. Hope everybody had fun for the holidays. We are back for another, but the first episode of Inside the Octagon for the new year. I'm your host, Kalani Lua. I got my man Leo and David on the lines with me. Fellas, what's going on for this new year with y'all?
What's happening, guys? Happy New Year. And, man, the eagle has landed and the eagle has been fed. What a hell of a way to end 2017.
Oh,
yeah,
indeed.
I totally agree. Happy New Year, everybody.
Man, oh, man. New Year. Hopefully this year we get some better year for the world of MMA than we did in 2017. Not to knock the fighters who did put on performances that year. It just wasn't the year we were hoping for. We'll see what this year has to go for us. Speaking of ending the year on a high note, UFC 219 was this past Saturday at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. And man, oh man, were we given a fantastic treat to end the year in one of the best female championship bouts we've seen. Chris Cyborg retains her UFC featherweight title over Holly Holm via unanimous decision. First time Cyborg's gone a distance since 2005. Close bout, the Cyborg put a stamp on why she is the baddest woman walking the planet. Leo, I'll start with you on this one. What did you make of the fight overall between Cyborg and Holm?
Yeah, I was very pleasantly surprised that it was such a close fight. I mean, I know a lot of judges scored it 4-1 or maybe even a close 3-2. I personally scored it 3-2 watching it live. I haven't seen the fight since. But I think it just goes to show that the fight was really close. And even if somebody tells you that Cyborg won up to four rounds, it doesn't really tell you the story because the fight was very back and forth. I think, you know, we saw very little, if any, grappling at all. And I was very impressed by the way Holly Holm was able to handle Chris Cyborg up against the fence. And, you know, she did a very good job just managing the little damage that Chris Cyborg was able to do with her against the clinch. And she was just able to exit cleanly and pick her spots. And I think she got a little bit desperate towards the end of the fight, you know, understandably so. I think she might have understood that she was behind in the cards. But I think Holly Holm did very admirably, and especially, you know, we were talking about this last week, and I think every member of the media was talking about how Cyborg was just primed for a marquee performance and just a performance that was probably going to be a little bit lopsided. But Holly Holm went in and showed a very, very good heart and a very good fight, and I think it was a very pleasant way to end 2018.
David, seeing how the fight ended up turning out, what was your biggest takeaway from this particular matchup? As Leo pointed out, many people felt it probably would go one way. Well, actually, we were given a pretty entertaining back-and-forth battle down to the final round. What was your biggest takeaway from this matchup?
I think the big takeaway here is that given the right opponent, Cyborg can look like a human being. And I think Holly Holm made Cyborg look human. And what shocked me the most was the judge's scorecard, because yes, me and Leo watching it live, we scored it 3-2. We scored it 48-47. But I think we both gave round 1 and 5 to Holly. But the judges gave rounds 1 and 2 to Holly. Two of the three judges gave rounds 1 and 2 to Holly. So on two of those judges' scorecards, Cyborg had to rally back and win 3 in a row, which I didn't think. I mean, imagine if two of the judges saw it the same way me and Leo saw it, whereas Holly Holm's desperation in the final round was enough to win that particular round. You know, imagine if that, and then we would have had a split decision win for Holly Holm, and things could be so much different today. We could be talking about something else. So I think the big takeaway here is Holly Holm didn't get sort of like battered as so many people were expecting. And sure, Cyborg came away as the winner, as a lot of us were expecting, but I was very happy with the fight, and I was very happy to see Holly Holm come out and put on a show and sort of put Cyborg in a situation we've never really seen her in.
It was very interesting to see the game plan of both fighters going in. Holly Holm obviously wanted to keep the distance, stay moving around, test the cardio tank of Chris Cyborg and bring her into the deeper rounds, whereas Cyborg, once again, like the Tonya Evinger fight, she took her time, she paced herself, she picked her spots, and one of the things that really stood out for me was the difference in power. Holly landed some very good shots. She became the first person to bust open Chris Cyborg. I remember watching it thinking, see, she's not a machine. She's a woman. Rocky IV, if anybody remembers. But every time Holly Holm would hit Cyborg, outside of a quick jab, you really didn't see Cyborg look like she was in trouble. But when Cyborg would hit Holly Holm, you would see Holm have to back up. She was staggered and wobbled a couple times, but she showed tremendous heart overall in withstanding the punishment and going forward. David, I'll stick with you on this one. Given that it went the distance and Cyborg took, you know, more punishment in this fight than she's ever taken, was it a testament to, one, how good Holly Holm is just as a fighter, even though she didn't win, or two, are we maybe starting to see a little slippage in Cyborg maybe not being as dominant as she once was, and maybe that aura of hers is starting to slip away and she's not the mauler and destroyer that she's hyped up to be? What are your thoughts?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, you watched that Tonya Evinger fight, and that was sort of the first that we saw of Cyborg not looking like Cyborg, really. And when you fast forward 6 months later, 5 months later, she fought Holly Holm. I think Holly Holm is the clear-cut number two in the division. So we can't take away anything from Cyborg's performance because she still won the fight. But could we really expect any less of Holly Holm? I mean, even in her losses to Misha Tate or Jermaine Durandamy, she still looked impressive in those losses. And against Jermaine Durandamy, you could argue she won the fight, as I did and so many others. So I think give Holly Holm a lot of credit for what she was able to do, but give Cyborg some credit too, because it's not like Holly Holm is just a cakewalk, you know? Holly Holm is the second toughest fighter in that division, and she came out and showed exactly why. And the decision just didn't go her way, but she didn't get pummeled like so many of us expected. So I was impressed by Cyborg and Holly Holm that night.
Yeah, I gotta say I agree that we're not necessarily seeing a slippage in the performance of Chris Cyborg. I think she's just turned into a more technical fighter. I think we remember her fighting style, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, where she would run forward and, you know, Vanderlei style, she would run forward and try to just diminish her fighters into making errors and eventually getting knocked out. But I think over the years, we've seen Cyborg become more of a technician and a more patient fighter, and she's waiting to pick her spots. And I think that's just maybe delaying the inevitable that we're going to see a knockout. And in this case, we didn't even see a knockout, but I think it just rises the stock of both fighters, and that we see that Cyborg is capable of going into the championship rounds and pulling off, you know, a championship victory late in the fight. And at the same time, as David points out, I think Holly Holm clearly paints herself as the venerable number two at the featherweight division. And yeah, her losses have been there over the last year or so, but they have been very close fights. And you can make an argument that she could have won the title against Jermaine Durandamy early last year. So I think this is one of those cases where both fighter stocks rise equally. And I think it's probably inevitable that we're going to be seeing a rematch between these two ladies, perhaps in 2018 or later on in 2019.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see if they do go a second time around. Cyborg being 32 years of age, but Holly Holm is 36 years of age. How much gas does she have left in the tank to continue on? Remains to be seen, but she certainly showed that she's got a lot left in the tank if she chooses to continue to compete at this level. I found it very interesting, and I do agree, some great points that you guys made. I do agree, I don't necessarily feel that it was Cyborg's slipping past her prime. I think it was her understanding that she is taking on a high-level striker in Holly Holm, someone who has very good technique, a very good game plan, extremely accurate. I think Cyborg found that out in the first round. This girl's very accurate. Her technique is very good. And given her skill level, she's not one that's going to get flustered by Cyborg just storming across the cage and bum rushing her like some other fighters have done. No, she's going to keep her composure. We saw her just like against Ronda Rousey. And if you try to be a bull in a china shop, she's going to make you pay for it. So I was very impressed with Cyborg keeping her composure throughout the entire fight, not getting over anxious. Even when she hurt her, I think it was the end of the third round maybe, where she wobbled her. Cyborg, it almost took a second to register that she had Holly Holm high. I think it was a Superman punch that she caught her with. And Holm kind of stumbled a little bit. And I think Cyborg said, oh, wait a minute, she's hurt. Let me try to go in here and get the finish. But time ran out. I want to ask both of you this question here. With this victory, obviously there are some matches that Cyborg just probably would never be able to have. But with this victory, does this make Chris Cyborg the greatest female mixed martial artist of all time? And then on the flip side, no shade, no, not trying to be disrespectful, but at the end of the day, Holly Holm, you know, she is 1-4 in her last five. Her three victories inside the UFC, Raquel Pennington and Betch Cojera being, you know, some of the more noticeable names. Cojera was impressive, but, you know, is it too far to say maybe Holly Holm could be a Buster Douglas and a one-hit wonder? Leo, I'll start with you on this one.
No, I think it would be unfair to categorize Holly Holm as a one-hit wonder type of fighter, because we've seen her have success in other sports. I think she did become the first combat sports fighter to become a champion at high-level MMA and high-level boxing. So I think she certainly has a big feather in her cap. And as we've been talking about, she fought very valiantly against perhaps the number one female fighter in the world. So I don't like the revisionist history of calling Holly Holm maybe a journeyman or a one-hit wonder. I think she does have the talent to stay at the top of two divisions in MMA. So I really do want to see Holly Holm turn it around. And as I said, I think this was a fight that, even in losing, her stock rose a little bit. And I do expect her to, you know, get back on the horse and perhaps keep challenging for titles either at 145 or 135. And it's just a matter of her turning it around. And as far as Chris Cyborg goes, I think without question, she did become the number one female fighter in combat sports. And she's almost in a Conor McGregor sort of situation, where there's not a whole lot of competition left for her in MMA. And now the talk is starting to turn into perhaps her going into the boxing world to find some kind of challenge, because up to this point in her career, she really hasn't faced much adversity. And I think I'd have to agree with her perhaps making a move into boxing, you know, maybe one or two more fights in MMA this year. But other than that, there's not a whole lot of there's not a big line of women waiting to fight her in MMA. So if she does decide to move into boxing, I think that would possibly be a good career move for her, which just elevates the stock that I put in her in her combat in her MMA career.
David, what do you think of those two questions?
Repeat the question.
With this victory, does this stamp Chris Cyborg's status as the greatest female mixed martial artist of all time? And just given the resume in mixed martial arts, is Holly Holm starting to teeter on Buster Douglas' one-hit wonder status now?
Yeah, so I think a long time ago, I mean, before, when Cyborg was still in sort of, when she was in Strikeforce and Invicta, I sort of, you already had to know Cyborg was the real deal and perhaps the greatest women's MMA fighter of all time. Even back then, I mean, I remember when the Cyborg Ronda Rousey talks were going on, Ronda Rousey looked indestructible, but oddsmakers still had Cyborg as a -300 favorite at that fight. So Cyborg always had this sort of aura around her. And I think having a win over Holly Holm is huge for her resume. So I do think Cyborg is perhaps the greatest women's MMA fighter of all time. But if you say Cyborg is a journeyman and a sort of like a Buster Douglas type. And I think that takes a lot of weight off of Cyborg's win over her, and I don't think that's exactly fair. I don't think Holly Holm is a journeyman. I think she's had a few missteps in her career, sure, but I agree with what Leo said. I mean, she was a high-level boxing champion and a high-level MMA champion. I mean, I don't even know how to say this, but when Ronda Rousey got knocked out with that head kick and Ronda Rousey looked so indestructible, she was a minus 1500 favorite. That was the biggest upset of all time in MMA, and that was such a huge statement for Holly Holm's career, and she looked so impressive in so many other fights that I don't think she's just a journeyman. I think she comes out and she delivers for the fans pretty much every time she gets out into the octagon. She's had a few boring fights, sure, but she's still a very impressive fighter, and I still think her name is going to go down in history as one of the best to ever do it in women's MMA, and I think the same goes for Cyborg, except Cyborg is perhaps the greatest to ever do it in women's MMA.
Yeah, Cyborg being number one, you know, she kind of took that title when she defeated Gina Carano back in the Elite XC Strikeforce days, and then obviously, you know, she had the steroid incident, and when the UFC opened up its doors to the women, and then Ronda went on her run, you know, it kind of went with Ronda. But, you know, even though they weren't in the same division, you know, as you point out, David, there was always kind of people in the know who paid attention and said, you know, Ronda's great. She's great. But there's this Brazilian female fighter who would beat the hell out of her. And I think Cyborg now just being in the UFC and then getting a victory over a former champion like Holly Holm really cements herself as the GOAT there. If you were to do a Mount Rushmore right now, as it stands, you probably have Cyborg, Rousey, Carano, and maybe Joanna Jędrzejczyk as the on the Mount Rushmore of female MMA fighters. Now, the sport itself is very young. The women's side of it is even younger. So we have a long ways to go to see how it is. But as of now, Cyborg is certainly up there. The reason I bring up Holly Holm as, you know, a one-hit wonder or the Buster Douglas, obviously this isn't a new phrase. Others have used it as well on social media. The only reason I bring that up is because going into a fight against Ronda Rousey, there's not a lot of people who gave her a chance. Yes, there were plenty who were caught up in the Ronda Rousey hype and experience and, oh, man, Rousey's just undefeated. She could beat Floyd Mayweather. She could beat Cain Velasquez. Yeah, we got it. But going into it, people were looking at Holly Holm and saying, look, she's done all this in boxing. That's fine. But in MMA, especially in the UFC, she didn't look that impressive. Her two victories before Ronda Rousey over Raquel Pennington and Marion Renu, they weren't that impressive. That they were split in unanimous decisions, and people were kind of saying, this is the girl everyone was talking about coming from boxing? Like, she didn't look like she would be that big of a threat outside of maybe landing a boxing uppercut maybe on Rousey. Now, with what she did against Rousey, it said, whoa, there's a whole lot more to her than meets the eye. And, yes, she's been in some close bouts with Jermaine Durandamy, Misha Tate, and Shevchenko, and Cyborg. But at the end of the day, we are a result-driven business. And, like I said, she is 1-4 in her last five since beating Ronda Rousey. She lost to Tate, she lost to Shevchenko, lost to Durandamy, lost to Cyborg. I mean, your resume reads, you beat Ronda Rousey, and you know, Raquel Pennington wasn't the Raquel Pennington who's ranked top five right now when you beat her. So she's a great fighter. Most likely she is going to go into the Hall of Fame. And I do not say this to be disrespectful, but there is something to be said about, as of right now, you did just have that one great moment against Ronda Rousey. Since then, it hasn't lived up to that hype since then. You haven't made that second big mark, or at least not against a known competition. So it would be fun and interesting to see what happens with Holly Holm next. And that's what I want to ask both of you. What do you do next with these female fighters? Let's go with Cyborg instead, since she won. Cyborg obviously getting a victory, but I don't know if you guys saw, she claims on social media today with an Instagram post that she got called by the UFC, offered a fight in Perth, Australia, to fight Invicta FC featherweight champion Megan Anderson, and she said yes. So according to Chris Cyborg, she's on February 10th, I believe, to take on Megan Anderson. Anderson obviously was calling for a fight with Cyborg, not only after 219, but over the summer when they were initially supposed to fight, but she had visa issues and other problems going on. Is that the smarter fight to make for both of you guys, give her a legit 145er, or what would you go with Cyborg? David, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I saw that tweet, and I don't know if it makes a lot of sense after Cyborg got out of perhaps the toughest fight of her career. I mean, a five-round fight of the night performance against Holly Holm. And then, what, 5-6 weeks later, you come back and fight Megan Anderson in Australia. I don't know if that makes a whole lot of sense to me. I'd like to see Cyborg take a little more time off, and maybe I'm just saying that because I want to see her fight at T-Mobile Arena in March, but I think that that would make a lot more sense. I know Sean Shelby's trying to build up that card now. As for Holly Holm, I think you made a case for yourself that you can put on a show against Cyborg. You can. She had a lot of bright moments in that fight, and I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere down the road they do get a rematch. Maybe Holly Holm. I think for sure Holly Holm's going to take a little bit of time off after this fight, but I think she picks up a good win against a contender, and she's back in it, in the mix of things. I think we're going to see a rematch with Cyborg fairly soon. As for the Cyborg thing, I know she tweeted that this morning. I just don't know if such a quick turnaround is a good thing in that case, but maybe that's just my bias because I want to see her fight at T-Mobile again. But I think logical next step for Cyborg is Megan Anderson. I think that is the logical thing, and for Holly Holm, it's to take some time off.
Yeah, I certainly like the matchup of Megan Anderson. I think that basically that's the only true featherweight in the world that's willing to take a fight against Cyborg. So I do love the matchup. I don't necessarily like the six-week turnaround. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought I had heard that Megan Anderson would not be ready by early February. So maybe that's already being, you know, kind of put on the back burner. I would love to see Chris Cyborg fight and defend her belt in Brazil, perhaps headline a fight down there. I think that would be perfect marketing for her by the UFC. So I do love the matchup, not necessarily in 1 month. I don't think that's necessarily enough time. And if memory serves right, I think just a year ago, Cyborg was saying that she would not take any fight in less than 12 weeks notice. But now all of a sudden she's willing to take a fight on six weeks notice. So I think that's just rushing a little bit too much. Maybe her last weight cut for UFC 219 went, you know, so stellar that she's confident in wanting to make the weight again in such short notice. But I think that would not necessarily be in her best interest to want to make such a quick turnaround and especially go, you know, halfway across the world to challenge someone in their home country. So I think, you know, it's certainly easy to call out for a fight, you know, the day after your fight, but I think she wants to be a little bit smarter about it and you know, let the UFC do some promotion around her and hopefully book her in either Vegas or Brazil.
Well, obviously, because we are locals here in Vegas, having Cyborg in Vegas would always be my first pick as well. Yeah, the quick turnaround is worrisome, but I also feel that because she went through this training camp, and as Cyborg said going in, she was the lightest she ever felt, and she, you know, with the nutrition team that they got and the diet and training that they got her on, she felt really good, and I just wonder if, because it's so close, she feels like, hey, I didn't balloon all the way up to my natural walk-around weight. So for the next couple weeks in January, if I do fight in February, I can go out there and not have to worry about trying to cut so much weight like I normally am required to do for a fight. Megan Anderson does present a different set of skills for Chris Cyborg. For those that don't know, just real quickly, Megan Anderson, the young 25-year-old Aussie from Australia, I believe she's 6 foot, 10-4, I believe, but she's a very aggressive striker. She loves to come forward. She's a natural fighter at 145 like Cyborg. So instead of having bantamweight at 135 move up, she would actually be cutting down like Cyborg. But she's been off for over a year now due to, you know, the UFC 214 when she had visa issues. And I'm not sure if anything else in her personal life is going on, but she did have those come up. So it will be interesting to see if the UFC is willing to do this. And, you know, as you guys pointed out, you do got the Vegas card coming up. Hey, Cyborg, are you willing to hold off a little bit? We'll see how it goes from there going forward with the champ and what she does to start off 2018. Real quickly, I want to ask you guys something that was one of the black eyes at the moment, and we don't have to cover it too much, but one of Jackson Wink MMA photographers posted a very unfortunate message on Instagram about Chris Cyborg, referring to her as a man several times over, and obviously this wasn't received well, and he has since apologized. The UFC has taken his credentials away. And Cyborg, obviously, you know, made her feelings known about it. The guy says basically it's because he was frustrated and he allowed his emotions to get the best of him because he caught the bus with Cyborg's team on the way to the hotel and he just heard all the trash talking they were doing and yada, 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 and he just let his emotions get the best of him. I want to ask you both this question. We know the issues that are going on with John Jones. That's pretty obvious what's going on. Not just in his personal life, but even when USADA tried to come by, he hid underneath the ring for close to 6 hours. You don't do that with nobody knowing that you're underneath the ring. You got this incident right here, with one of your photographers calling a female champion who showed nothing but respect for Holly Holm a man the whole time, and especially given, you know, her history with Dana White and others. And we've had other fighters who have either tested positive or been flagged by USADA, and other incidents happened with Jackson Wink's gym. For as established as this gym is, guys, are there maybe some shady characters or things going on at Jackson Wink that we just overlooked due to the calm nature of Jackson Wink finding their waterfall and presenting themselves as professionals? But underneath, maybe they got a dark side to them we don't really look at so much. Leo, what do you think about this?
I think, Jackson Wink is probably the most successful and, you know, just one of the biggest gyms in the world of MMA. And I think, every now and again, you're going to catch some bad eggs. And this unfortunate event this past weekend is just part of that. You know, you can't really control what everybody does or says, especially on social media when, you know, tempers are not necessarily, you know, in control. So a guy said something that was just stupid and perhaps didn't consult anybody. You know, he just went on and started ranting on social media. And, you know, obviously he saw the consequences after that. And I don't necessarily think that this reflects necessarily what the mindset of the Jackson Wink camp was. I think it was just an isolated event with one guy putting something stupid on social media. It is unfortunate that, you know, Jackson Wink, you know, their names are attached to this news story, but I don't necessarily think that it's something that was under their control. I think hopefully moving forward, they're going to mind their P's and Q's a little bit more about, you know, what kind of staff they bring with them. But I think this particular reporter or this photographer, his days, being credentialed for the UFC are probably behind him. So I think it's just unfortunate that Jackson Wink are involved in this situation. Probably, that was something beyond their control.
David, what about you? What do you think?
Most of us, about 80% of MMA fans, have called Cyborg a man to some capacity at one point or the other in the last 7 years. And that doesn't make it nice. That doesn't make it okay. But I think that's just something that Cyborg has heard so much throughout her career that it got to her, and that's totally understandable. I do think that the photographer at Jackson Wink, I don't think it's anything shady or anything. I think he legitimately heard some trash talk against Holly Holm, and emotions got in the way of things, and he posted something silly on social media. When you're someone so closely associated to the sport and to a title contender such as Holly Holm, when you're affiliated with Jackson Wink, you shouldn't be saying these things, plain and simple. But he apologized. He gave a sort of half apology, and I do believe he didn't mean it in like an extremely, like, sort of non-politically correct or like
like a transphobic or any sort of way like that. I do think he was just trash talking. It was a little off colored, I don't believe he would have got his credential taken away from him if Cyborg didn't want his credential taken away from him. So the fact that it did hurt Cyborg so much, the fact that she requested his credential be taken, and she has every right to be offended because, again, this is something I'm sure she's heard throughout her career so much. And at some point, you know, it gets old, especially if you're the butt of all these mean sort of jokes. I don't think it was sort of, I don't think he had like a very negative intention towards it. I think it was just sort of trash talk, but hey, you know, Cyborg has every right to request his media credential be taken, and the UFC had to do what they had to do, and I don't blame the UFC at all for pulling his media credential.
For those who may not be familiar, and I'll just read it really quick and then we'll move on from this. But the guy takes a picture of Chris Cyborg doing a post-fight press conference, and he says, "This dude is tough as hell." That being said, at the press conference, he said, "Holly was the first one to make his nose bleed. You are my hero, Holly Holmes. See you back in the gym." You know, if you want to do trash talking, you're a photographer. Nobody knows you, man. Just you're not Esther Lynn from MMAfighting.com. You're not known yet. So be cool. Stay in your lane, as LeVar Ball would say. And it is unfortunate, but I'm glad the UFC acted correctly on this. Although I'm surprised the UFC didn't punish Dana White for saying she looks like Wanderlei Silva in the wig. But who cares about that, right? Now, let's talk about something curious. And I'll start with Leo on this one since he brought it up. The eagle has landed. It's been over a year, but Khabib Nurmagomedov made everybody remember why he is now 25-0 and should be challenging for the title, if not already a champion, as he gets a dominant, and I mean dominant, victory over Edson Barbosa with scorecards reading 30-25, 30-25, and 30-24. Folks, if you're not aware, this was a three-round fight. If anything, it should have been 30-27. That's how bad Barbosa lost. He had scorecards of 25-24. Whew. Leo, I'll let you start with this one, man. What do you think about the Eagles' performance?
My goodness. I mean, talk about probably the number one lightweight in the world. And this is a guy who's been doing it for so long, but unfortunately his career has been marred by injuries and faulty weight cuts, which, you know, he says that are due to injuries. But when Khabib Nurmagomedov is on, that guy is probably the scariest lightweight in the world. And I think Edson Barbosa just, you know, unfortunately for him, saw that firsthand, and what a way for him to end his 2017 just being mauled by this Russian bear who just wouldn't let off. And I think it was just very admirable and impressive. I think Khabib Nurmagomedov said post-fight that he could have finished the fight probably at any point, but he just wanted to get some minutes, some octagon minutes in because he hasn't fought in over a year. And when he says that he could have finished Edson Barbosa, I believe him because he was just that dominant. And I think I saw him a couple of instances during the fight that he was in a very dominant position, but somehow he lost that position. And I just think that he is right, that he could have finished the fight at any point, but he wanted to kind of play with his food a little bit. And we got a hell of a show by Khabib Nurmagomedov. And I hate to say it because Tony Ferguson is the interim champion, but I do want to see Khabib Nurmagomedov in a championship fight ASAP because he is that good, and I think he will end the year by being the UFC lightweight champion if given the chance and if he stays healthy.
I don't have the button on here, but if I could, I would put a bold prediction. Being a champion by the end of the year. I like it. David, my man, you and Leo, you know, was there. Unfortunately, I couldn't join you guys, but what did you make of Khabib's performance live and in person, seeing just how dominant this guy truly is?
Yeah, first thing I want to say to Leo, Conor has to defend that belt if Khabib can get him to become the champion, and the UFC has to strip him if he's not going to defend the belt. And neither of those things are happening right now. I don't know what's going on, but hey, the fight was amazing. I felt like when me and Leo were sitting there watching it, we were witnessing greatness. You know, in the octagon. Like, it was sort of like this surreal feeling throughout all of T-Mobile Arena. The fans knew it. We knew it. We were seeing something special in the Octagon that night. We were seeing Khabib Nurmagomedov, perhaps one of the greatest grapplers to ever do it, doing everything so well. And it's so rare to see that type of just complete dominance on the slate. It was the most lopsided decision in history. So it was actually the biggest performance in history. And he won front for the night bonus fairly. I mean, I was so excited to see Khabib fight. I mean, I was just happy to see him in the Octagon. But to go out there and do what he did against Edson Barboza, I mean, Edson Barboza threw a few head kicks, and the way Khabib just ate those and just kept pressing on and walking down Edson Barboza, it was like, you don't see stuff like that every day, and Khabib is really something special. Now, what's going on with the UFC and Conor, the lightweight division? I think Conor tweeting that it was a dog shit performance was completely uncalled for. I mean, Conor was probably shitting his pants when he saw that performance by Khabib. And I don't think Khabib did any favors for getting Conor back into the Octagon anytime soon. I don't think this is someone Conor wants to mess with. I think Khabib is, and we've known this for so long, Khabib is the real deal. And we're most likely going to see Khabib fight Tony sometime in March, I think, at T-Mobile Arena, as opposed to Conor fighting Tony, or eventually Conor fighting Khabib. And that's very unfortunate. I want to see Khabib take on these big performances, the big mountains, and climb them and overcome them. I want to see him against Tony more than anything. That's probably the number one fight to make, in my opinion, in the lightweight division. And for Conor to just be doing what he's doing and just keeping that whole division on lockdown, so to speak, and just calling Khabib dog shit performance, and they have to beg him to fight and all this, it's just bogus, and it's really sad to see that from Conor. And but I think that says a lot that Khabib just put on such a big performance that this is the kind of response you get from Conor.
With this performance, I truly believe, you know, we're not the only ones that say it. Joe Rogan says it. Other people say it. But when you hear the term, there are levels to this, sometimes it gets a little overused, and you're just like, yeah, all right. But I think Khabib really did show there's different levels to grappling, because Edson Barboza comes from a camp that has Frank Yeager, Eddie Alvarez, and others as well. Granted, you know, Yeager being the smaller, but still, these are top-level grapplers, or at least with, you know, grappling backgrounds, who applied in MMA, and Barboza knew all this time what Khabib's game plan was. He knew it, and yet he looked like he was dumbfounded. He almost looked as if he thought Khabib was a striker and then became this ultimate wrestler after that. That's how dominant Khabib was with his striking. And coincidentally, when you bring up Khabib eating the kicks, one of the things I thought was very well pointed out, I think it was Dominic Cruz that said it, one of the reasons he was so successful at attacking Barboza is when Barboza throws his kicks, whether it's to the leg, the body, or the head, a lot of times his opponents would get hit, and they would kind of just stand there and kind of, you know, take the hit and kind of reset themselves. And that allows Barboza to reset his footing, take a step back, and then get ready to fire off another one and set his place. With Khabib constantly pushing forward, Barboza was never really able to set himself up to throw more than one kick at a time. Sometimes maybe, but that constant pressure, as we talked about many times on this show, there's something about that constant pressure. The Terminator keeps coming at you, that really flusters a lot of opponents going forward. Leah, I want to come back to you on this one. This was the second time, and it wasn't as eyewitnessing as it was against Michael Johnson. We did see Barboza land some shots standing up, and we did see one where it looked like Khabib might have got a little rocked, just for a slight moment, where his knees kind of said, uh-oh, we don't like that. Given that Conor McGregor's got some serious power in that left hand, and he's very accurate, and his timing is good, do you think if maybe Tony Ferguson or Conor McGregor did fight, maybe their stand-up being better than Barboza and Johnson's, that their stand-up will be able to maybe mollify Khabib's grappling and maybe catch him on the feet? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, we have noticed a couple of hiccups in Khabib Nurmagomedov's stand-up game before, and this was evident, you know, as you said, slightly less this time around than against Michael Johnson. But we are seeing, a couple of mistakes in Nurmagomedov's game. But when you're walking down, when you're just straight up walking forward against one of the best strikers in MMA, you're probably going to get caught here and there. But Khabib Nurmagomedov kept moving forward, and he just basically took control the entire fight. And as you said, Edson Barboza's face just looked absolutely flabbergasted. He looked so helpless and just like a guy who didn't know what to do once he was taken down. And, you obviously got to respect the power of, someone like Conor McGregor. And I would certainly probably favor McGregor in the first few minutes of a fight against Khabib Nurmagomedov. But the problem is, if you don't knock this guy out, eventually you're just going to go down. And once he takes you down, there's really no getting back up until he lets you back up or until the round is over. So you just have to take that into account, that I think Conor McGregor's only way out in a fight against Nurmagomedov would probably be to knock him out. And, if you just don't do that, it's going to be a very long night for you and for anybody else at 155. So I think, as I said, this is probably the number one lightweight in the world, certainly the number one lightweight without a title. So it's going to be a long night for anybody trying to beat someone like Khabib Nurmagomedov.
David, I want to ask you this. It's come up before, and McGregor has even mentioned it, that he would like to fight Khabib in Russia. Now, Tony Ferguson is the interim champion. Khabib does have a weight-cutting and injury-prone history to mind as well. If you're the UFC, David, do you try to see if you can book Conor and Khabib in Russia sometime this year and just skip over Tony Ferguson? Or do you try to go off the ladder and say, look, we got to get Khabib and Tony Ferguson interim title somewhere in the spring. The winner takes on Conor, hopefully sometime in the summer. Let's make it happen. What would be your first goal if you're the UFC, if you're given those two options?
No, I don't think there's any way you just sort of like skip over Tony Ferguson and just go straight to Khabib and Conor. I don't think there's any sort, because that would be very sort of unfair to Tony, because Tony's been active. Tony hasn't had these sort of weight-cutting issues. Tony's been winning fights impressively left and right. So I think Tony is clearly deserving to fight Conor. Or if you can't figure this Conor thing out, because Dana White said he's willing to move on without Conor, right? And if you can't figure out what's going on with Conor, you go straight to Khabib and Tony, and maybe strip Conor of the belt, because Conor's asking the UFC for ownership stakes and to beg him to fight and this and that. And the Fertittas would have never allowed something like this to happen. And I think with the whole scenario, the logical thing to me is Conor's not coming back anytime soon. You got to sort of just accept that Khabib and Tony were supposed to fight last March at T-Mobile Arena. Very unfortunate the morning of the fight Khabib was hospitalized and had to pull out, because that is the fight to make right now in the lightweight division. I think it would make a lot of sense for this March, 1 year later, this March, T-Mobile Arena, make Khabib and Tony happen. And because a lot of people think Khabib deserves to fight Conor, and a lot of people think Tony deserves to fight Conor, the logical next step is to make these two people fight, because Conor is going to take more time off. And we've seen guys like Henan Burrell, for example, defend that interim title while Dominic was inactive. So I think, yeah, the logical thing to do is make Tony versus Khabib in March at T-Mobile, see what happens with Conor in the summer.
Yeah, certainly, if I can jump. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think if a fight happens in March, it certainly has to be Tony and Khabib for the interim title. I think, if that were the case, if Tony has to defend the interim title while Conor McGregor is sitting out healthy, the right thing to do would be to strip Conor McGregor and make that for the real title. I don't think the UFC is going to do that. I think there is something to having Conor McGregor be the champion for whatever reason. So I don't think they're going to strip him, even though that should be what they do. But as far as matchmaking goes, that certainly is the fight that I want to see. You know, these are my two wishes for 2018. I want to see Khabib and Tony, and I want to see TJ versus DJ. And I think Khabib and Tony just kind of overtook that number one spot in my heart a little bit. Man, we've been salivating over this fight for the last couple of years, and I think they've booked it two or three times, and we haven't seen it. I think fourth time is the charm. I think you have to make that fight happen in the spring. And if Conor McGregor does not want to come back until the summer, you know, maybe you can match him up against Nate Diaz. It's kind of like a hold me over type of fight. And, you know, the winner of Khabib and Tony can fight Conor in the fall or maybe at the end of the year. But if Conor McGregor doesn't want to come back until summer, I don't think the UFC wants to keep delaying this the movement of the division. I think you really want to strike while the iron's hot. And, man, in my opinion, Khabib and Tony are probably the number one and two lightweights in the world, and Conor's just the guy who has the title. You know, Conor's only fought in the lightweight division once. It just happened to be for the title. But these guys have been mauling through 155ers left and right. So, you know, as much as I want to see Conor McGregor fight both of these guys, I want to see Tony and Khabib fight each other more than anything. And, you know, the winner's going to get Conor McGregor. But I think that's the most logical and the smartest. And, you know, the best thing to do is match up Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson for, I guess, the interim title. Although, in my opinion, that's the true title.
Yeah, no, you both made great points. It'd be hard for me to make a case against you guys. The only one that I could make would be, you also got to remember, UFC is now by WME, which is an entertainment company, and they're all about what the bigger picture is. It makes sense to do Khabib versus Tony because then that sets up someone who really can build their fan base and get their name out there even more for a Conor McGregor matchup, so it does make it better. excuse me. You know, but then, you know, do you run the risk of either one of them getting injured? If it's Khabib that wins, what if he gets injured or has another weight-cutting issue? Tony doesn't necessarily have that same problem, but still, you just never know. So, again, you know, that's really the only argument I can make. Maybe not the strongest, but that's the only one I could come in with right now. I would love to see Khabib and Tony finally step in the ring against each other. I think Tony Ferguson's unorthodox style and his ability to fight very well off of his back, no pun intended, not pun, but phrasing, I guess I could say, would really be interesting to see against Khabib's top game, how that all neutralized each other. And then the winner against Conor later this year, that'll be fun. This card necessarily didn't give, you know, it only had two stoppages. The very first fight, which is on the prelim card on Fight Pass, and then Dan Hooker got a submission victory over Mark DeCessi. Every other fight went to decision. The two fights I want to bring up real quick before we jump into other MMA news. Carlos Esparza got, I don't know how you guys felt about it. I kind of felt like a somewhat surprised victory over Cynthia Calvillo, who, according to what I was reading earlier, she might even be medically suspended for 6 months. And that's unfortunate given she had, what, four or five fights in 2017 alone. What did you guys make of Esparza and Calvillo? Pretty close matchup down to the last wire. But Esparza, the former champion, gets the nod here. What did you guys make of it? And, David, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think I thought we agreed with the decision. I was more happy for Carla Esparza to get the win than Cynthia Calvillo, because Cynthia Calvillo is still very young in her career, and she could handle these losses. Whereas Carla Esparza is at the point in her career where she needs to be proving herself and winning these sort of big fights. And I think what we talked about last week is the UFC sort of throwing Carla to the wolves with these tough matchups for her, and that explains why Carla's racked up so many losses since the Joanna fight about 3 years ago. Jeez, that went by quick. But I think this was a great win for Carla, and I thought this win was more important to Carla than for Cynthia. I think Carla needed this win more, and I think that sort of motivated her to step up, because Cynthia Calvillo was perhaps the toughest challenge for Carla since that Joanna fight. She really wanted to get the victory, and I'm glad she did, because what we talked about last week, she'd been through so many hardships the last 3 years since she won the ultimate fight, that I think it was, I was happy to see her win, because she really deserved to win that fight, and
it meant a lot to her. So I'm excited to see where Carla goes looking forward, moving on from here. And, it was definitely a big statement for her.
Yeah, so going into this fight, man, as you mentioned, Kalani, we've seen Silte Calvillo fight five times in 2017 out of, what, six fights or seven fights? I mean, we've seen basically her entire career over the last year, and I think this was just a big step up in competition for Calvillo, and that showed clearly on Saturday. You know, Carla Esparza, a former champion, she's been very much looked over, even by the UFC, and, you know, I think we mentioned it last week that she's probably a fighter who's fighting with a chip on her shoulder. I think, you know, she's fighting this young up-and-coming lion, but she's kind of getting looked over as if she really hasn't done much in her UFC career. But I think she's been a very consistent fighter in UFC, Carla Esparza has, and I think it just showed that, you know, her veteran status is not necessarily in danger at this point, and she can still possibly contend at the 115-pound division. And Cynthia Calvillo is just, you know, just a little bit young in her career, probably a little bit green. And, you know, up until this past Saturday, I thought she would have been perhaps the revelation of 2017, maybe the rookie of the year or the fighter of the year maybe, but she just ran into a brick wall. And I was very much looking forward to seeing how, you know, Esparza's wrestling would match up against Calvillo's jiu-jitsu. And I think Esparza just really put it on her, and in my opinion, she won the last two rounds. And I don't agree with Calvillo storming off thinking that she won the fight, because I think it was a pretty clear decision victory for Carla Esparza. I think she dominated most of the exchanges on the ground, and I thought she was a deserving winner.
Now, certainly Calvillo was on a hot streak in 2017, going 4-0 before her loss, 3-0 in the UFC. She looked like she was on a fast track to potentially getting a title shot probably somewhere in 2018. And she still could, you know, if that medical suspension isn't as accurate, she still could work her way up there. But, yeah, this was a very close matchup. And, you know, it goes to show you what one bad loss for Esparza, that is, against Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and then back-to-back injuries. You know, after the loss, she suffered an injury in training. She came back. She beat Juliana Lima. She got injured again. And just, you know, that loss and then her not having, like, a highlight reel victory after that, and then being away, you know, out of sight, out of mind, it really made people forget that, hey, even though she didn't defend the title, this is the first woman strawweight champion, and she did win the Ultimate Fighter Series to earn it. So she's definitely a tough, tough fighter in her own right. And I think Carla Esparza now being 2-1 in 2017, if she can remain healthy, she's got some good momentum heading into 2018, looking for another step up in competition. So it would be interesting to see. But yeah, I could certainly see where Cynthia felt that maybe she got robbed, but I also felt like, you know, we've all talked about this as well. We're saying, you know, you can't necessarily say the judges got it wrong if the fight goes into the last round and you don't know who won yet. You get it wrong if, you know, someone dominates four rounds and then the other opponent wins the last one and they give it to that one. That's when you're like, okay, that's a robbery. But if it's, you know, 1-1 heading into the last round, it goes either way. I don't necessarily see that as necessarily being a robbery, but I can see where Cynthia was frustrated. But, yeah, I agree. It would have been nice to see her respond a little bit differently. But, not going to criticize her, because you know what? She trained her ass off for it. She worked hard for it, and she went out there and tried to do the best she could to get the victory. She just came up short. Speaking of coming up short, Neil Magny, welcome back Carlos Condon, who took some time off mulling retirement. And, well, he got a victory here in a bit of a surprise fashion, but more surprising, I think, was how Carlos Condon looked. He didn't look like the natural-born killer we're accustomed to seeing in there. Was this because Neil Magny was just a proper matchup for him that didn't allow him to get off? Was it the ring rust and being gone so long? Is it that Condon, because he's 1 foot out the door in retirement or staying in, he just doesn't have the same fire and drive? What did you guys make of Neil Magny's victory over Carlos Condon? Leo, I'll start with you.
Yeah, to me, this was one of the more disappointing fights of the night. I think it was a fight that I was certainly really looking forward to. It was one of those hidden gems in a UFC pay-per-view, and it just didn't deliver. I think, as you said, Carlos Condit just looked very tentative, very slow, and just not very willing to engage against Neil Magny. And Magny just kind of did what he could to neutralize him. He wasn't necessarily active either. He was just more active than Condit. So it was kind of a... not necessarily the most entertaining fight, and kind of disappointing to see Carlos Condit you know, after such a long layoff, return to action in such a fashion. But I mean, maybe ring rust was a factor. Maybe, as you said, he's already been thinking about retirement for the last couple of years. I think, you know, he first mentioned the word, maybe not the word retirement, but he started talking about walking away a couple of years ago. And I think, you know, he's been brought back through, you know, by being given title shots or big marquee matchups. But, you know, these marquee matchups are not going to keep happening. You know, he's got 3 losses in a row and he's lost 4 out of the last 5. So I would like to see Carlos kind of get one more crack and see if he could still either be in fun matchups or maybe even contend. I was surprised to see that he's only 33 years old at this point. He seems a lot older because he's been in so many fights and he's been in a lot of big wars. But I think biologically he's still a young guy and he could still, you know, probably turn it around. But I would like to see him get one more shot and see if he can, you know, have some kind of an impressive performance and move from there. But to me, it was a bit disappointing to see that Carlos Condit this past Saturday.
David, what about you?
Yeah, I think the fight sort of went down a little bit how I expected. I mean, me and Leo, we bet on Neil Magny on our parlay cards, but we're sort of, I mean, I was sort of still rooting for Carlos Condit. I just felt like even though Condit was the favorite in this fight, the odds were really stacked against him because Neil Magny is a tough competitor and he is active. And I mean, last week, I think we were talking about if Neil Magny is a gatekeeper, and he even sort of responded to the media's claims that he's just a gatekeeper because he has these sort of flashes where you see, oh man, he's great, but it's really hard to gauge his performance against Carlos Condit because, you know, there's always the ring rust talk. Carlos Condit hasn't fought in over a year, and even then, he's lost 6 of his last 8. I mean, let's face it, he's just not the same Carlos Condit we're used to, and it's sad because Carlos Condit used to be my favorite fighter 5 or 6 years ago, and but Neil Magny's still a tough SOB. I mean, he's the exact opposite of Carlos Condit. He's won 5 of his last 7 fights, and he's looked pretty good in a lot of his performances. So it just wasn't sort of the right matchup for Carlos Condit coming back from a year-plus layoff and considering retirement since he lost to Robbie Lawler a couple years ago. It just wasn't a good matchup for him, especially given the circumstances, and yet Neil Magny had a chip on his shoulder and he had something to prove. So it was just a bad combination of things for Carlos Condit. I mean, I still think Carlos Condit has something left in him. There were still flashes in this fight of maybe with a little bit of time back in the gym over. I mean, he's at Jackson Wink. It's the best gym in the world. So I think there's a lot of options for Carlos Condit. It just wasn't his night, and it was a tough matchup coming back from the year-plus, year-and-a-half almost layoff. So I don't think Carlos Condit's career is over yet, but it's curious to see where he goes from here.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see where he does decide to go from here. His last fight was before this one, August of last year, and a loss against Damian Maia via rear naked choke. I kind of call this the GSP effect. If you look at GSP's resume, especially for UFC fighters, outside of John Fitch, everyone else either has a losing or average record. Thiago Alves is 5-5, and others as well. Now, some of them, like Matt Hughes and Matt Serra, no longer fighting. But if you look at the guys that GSP beat in his career in the UFC, afterwards, you know, these were world beaters and former champions or title contenders. Somehow, some way, something is linked to when all of them lost to GSP. They never were able to regroup and be the same fighter once again, or at least find the same level of success that they once found to get to the Canadian champion. So, you know, again, just a little tidbit there. If you guys look at the records, it's not very pretty for most fighters. But Condit, yeah, being gone that long and then taking on a very tough fighter, Neil Magny. You know, for Condit, I'm like you, Leo. I was very surprised to see that. Wow, he's only 3 years old. I really thought he was 36, 37. But, you know, he's kind of like Shogun Hua. He's been around for so long, and he's been in so many wars, it does feel like he's much older than what his age would suggest. So whether he wants to continue fighting or find somebody else to take on, we'll see. Maybe a matchup against a Gunnar Nelson. I know because they train at the same gym. I don't know if him and Cerrone would ever agree to a fight, even though Cerrone is moving that back down to lightweight. Who knows? He might change his mind and decide that, hey, you know what? This cut is just a little too much. So we'll see what goes on from there. But 219 was a good card overall. It gave us a good way to end 2017. Now, going into 2018, there's a lot of good stuff we hope we're going to see. But I wanted to bring this guys up to you, and we talked to about it right before the show. Nevada State Athletic Commissioner has said, from the evidence he has right now, and it's not set in stone, it's not a done deal, and it could change, but from what he has right now, it looks like former UFC light heavyweight champion John Jones did not intentionally take a banned substance. Kind of like Yoel Romero, when he took a banned substance, it wasn't intentional, it was a product. He only served a 6-month suspension. Guys, if this holds up, and let's say John Jones doesn't get the full suspension, maybe they give him 6 months, 8 months, who knows? Maybe they even say it'll be time served from his last fight. We'll see how it plays out. But if John Jones is able to come back quicker than what we expected, what are your guys' thoughts on possibly the greatest mixed martial artist of all time getting what seems like his third or fourth or fifth or sixth chance to prove that he's finally figured it all out? Are you guys excited? Are you kind of meh about it? Or are you just saying, all right, well, what's the next thing he's going to mess up on? What are you guys' thoughts on John Jones potentially coming back sooner rather than later? And, Leo, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so I can't help but to be a little bit apprehensive and not necessarily wanting to hold my breath and see what's next for John Jones, because, as you said, he's just burned us so many times and time again. And maybe there's a little bit of just bad fortune following John Jones around, but at the same time, it's just, no, he just can't get his career on track, and he just seems like he's a guy who's completely lost control of his fighting career. So at this point, we're talking about what Nevada State or California Athletic Commissions are you know, investigating and see if his fighting future is still viable. And you know, it's unfortunate. I think you know, John Jones has burned me several times. You know, he's been one of my favorite fighters for a long time, but I think after 3 or 4 or 5 chances, his legacy is certainly diminished. And I think, you know, even if he does come back in 2018 or maybe early 2019, there's still going to be a bit of apprehension from the fans towards John Jones. And I think we've seen that through, you know, the fans embracing Daniel Cormier after, you know, everything that's happened over the last couple of years. So I think that, you know, John, maybe I don't necessarily think that people have moved past John Jones, but I think certainly his legacy has taken quite a bit of a hit, and I don't necessarily know that he's going to catch that aura of you know, greatest martial artist of all time if and when he comes back. But I am excited to see him back if he does come back, and I can't wait to see what the final decision is from the commissions. But I don't think I'll ever see John Jones in the same way again after all his legal issues and everything that's happened outside the cage.
That's fair. That's some great points, and that's a fair observation. I like it. David, what about you? What comes to mind when you hear John Jones might be back sooner rather than later?
Oh, my first thought is, woohoo, John Jones versus Brock Lesnar. Bring it on. No, I mean, it's you got to agree with everything Leo just said, because John Jones has been through so much, and every time he damages his career a little bit more, but every time the fans forgive him. And we'll see if the fans have one more shot for John Jones. And I think if somehow he just pulls a miracle out of it, man, this, yeah, you were saying this before the show. I couldn't believe that John Jones actually has a sliver of hope, but I'm happy and sad at the same time. I'm happy because the UFC has the superstar that they're missing in Conor McGregor right now. I'm happy because I'm always happy to see Brock Lesnar come back to the octagon. And if John Jones gets a short suspension. If he comes back by the end of the year, I think we're going to see that happen. I mean, let's face it, John Jones doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who deserves to get all these opportunities given to him. I mean, every time he messes up and every time he comes back out of it, and it's like, how many times can we forgive this guy? And I think the fans are asking themselves the same question. I don't think we're going to see the same response to John Jones when he comes back, regardless of who he fights, but I think the fans are going to tune in regardless. I still think he's going to be the biggest star the UFC has if Conor doesn't return, or the second biggest star the UFC has if Conor returns. I still think he's going to sell. He's going to be good to sell near a million pay-per-views every time he fights, like he did against Daniel Cormier. And I think the UFC definitely wants him to be back too. So I think I want to see him come back. I don't want to see a long suspension, even if he is innocent in all this. I'm not so sure I'm going to believe it, but I'm always excited to see him fight and whatever matchups they give him. So I want a short suspension, but if he doesn't get a short suspension, hey, he knows exactly what he did. But I was a little happy to hear that news that John Jones may have a shot at this thing. And we'll see. I mean, the hearing is what, like in 2 weeks or something like that. So we'll see, but I'm not holding my breath.
Well, speaking of holding breath here, obviously if you're talking about getting one of the greatest mixed martial arts, if not the greatest mixed martial artist back in the cage, that would bode well not only for the UFC and Endeavor, WMEIMG, which is now called Endeavor. It will bode well for them, but it also bodes well for the fans and for John Jones. It'd be a chance for him to hopefully right his wrongs, cement his legacy, and come back yet again and maybe capture his belt. And wouldn't it be something if he had to come back and Daniel Cormier was still the champion and had to go at it for a third time? The trash talking in that one would just be crazy on how those two would go about it. I'm pretty sure it would be a stacked card to make sure that nothing, no snafus happen once again. But speaking about holding breaths here, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I've heard this rumor. I've kind of been hearing some little talks, some little quees in the shadows more and more. It sounds like we might be getting the current, the reigning, and defending WWE Universal Champion, the one in 21-1, Eat, Sleep, and Repeat, Brock Lesnar. Might be coming back to the cage. Now, he is in his early 40s. He is in the WWE, but he is a part-time wrestler, and his contract with WWE does seem to be coming to an end around WrestleMania time this year, and Brock is scheduled to be in a big main event, yada, yada, yada. Don't want to bore you guys with the wrestling here, especially Leo. We know how he likes wrestling. but if you guys remember, Brock Lesnar did not say that his fight against Mark Hunt felt like his swan song to end his career. He is facing a suspension for a failed substance. It wasn't necessarily steroids, but I believe it was some type of cream of some sort that he was using, like an asthma cream or something. But nonetheless, he did fail USADA drug testing. But if Brock Lesnar was to come back to MMA, and obviously a bit of UFC, what do you guys think of the potential of the former UFC heavyweight champion making his, once again, return to the cage? Excited, man, just waiting for him to have a one-off, and then he fails another drug test. What are you guys' thoughts on Brock Lesnar potentially coming back? And David, I'll start with you.
I am probably the biggest Brock Lesnar fan you guys know, maybe. I don't know if you guys knew this about me. I love seeing Brock Lesnar on every single time. I damn near cream my pants every time Enter Sandman gets on in the arenas. I love seeing this guy fight. The Mark Hunt fight, there's no denying it was a little boring, but I mean, I was there for the Overeem fight. I was there for the Velasquez fight. I was there for the Shane Carwin fight. I love seeing Brock Lesnar every time he gets in the octagon because he has this aura around him where he is a superstar. He is a badass. He's an absolute
mammoth of a human being every time he gets into the cage, and he sort of has this aura around him no other superstar can emulate. No Connor, no GSP, no Ronda. They don't have that same aura as Brock Lesnar. He is, I mean, Joe Rogan said it best. He was born in the wrong century. This guy is like a warrior from thousands of years ago. And as soon as I heard John Jones versus Brock Lesnar, I was so excited for that fight. And I ended up being so disappointed with what happened with John Jones that we just talked about. But, I mean, any sort of fight with Brock Lesnar, I'm all for it. He sells pay-per-views. He's been in exciting fights throughout his career, and I think he's got more exciting fights in him. So if he wants to come back to the Octagon, I say I'm all for it, and I know the fans are going to be all for it, and I think that WME is going to be happy with whatever revenue they make. My only question is, outside of the John Jones fight, what's a fight the fans would want to see? Brock Lesnar, I don't think Brock is going to be fighting for the title anytime soon. I don't want to see an Overeem rematch. Frank Mir is out of the UFC now ever since his USADA debacle. So the fight I was most excited for is maybe a Frank Mir trilogy match, but that's sort of impossible now. So outside of John Jones, I just don't know what matchup you're going to give Brock Lesnar that the fans would be excited to tune in for. But if they figure it out, I'm all for it, and I'm sure the fans will be too.
So every time there's contract talks going on with Brock Lesnar, it always seems like he's just waiting for a bidding war to happen between UFC and WWE. And I think WWE is willing to play that game, but up until recently, the UFC really wasn't willing to go into some kind of bidding war for Brock Lesnar. But I think with new ownership now, WME and IMG, and we have this entertainment aspect kind of being implemented into the UFC, I think this makes perfect sense. We saw Brock Lesnar come back for a one-off fight, and I don't see it out of the realm of possibility that they could offer him a contract, a multiple fight contract, or even just a one fight contract to fight once again in the UFC. And as you mentioned, Kalani, he's shown some kind of interest. He said, after beating Mark Hunt, that's not necessarily the last time we're going to see Brock Lesnar in the Octagon. So if it comes to some kind of contract talks, I don't see it out of the realm of possibility that he might fight once again. And I think it would make sense for him to fight John Jones. I think that's the fight that basically we were promised after a UFC 214, not necessarily by UFC brass, but that's kind of what we all put our chips on the table to see that fight. And that would be the perhaps the ultimate fight to see between Brock Lesnar and John Jones. And if that doesn't happen, I still wouldn't mind seeing him fight against Cain Velasquez. I think, Cain's not necessarily in title contention anytime soon. He's been away for a long time. So if he came back against someone like Brock Lesnar, I would love to see that. I'd love to see who's wrestling neutralizes the other guy. But in any case, Brock Lesnar against anybody would sell, and it would draw crowds. And I think it would pump life into the lack of stardom in the UFC roster. So I haven't been the biggest Brock Lesnar fan, and maybe I just haven't been appreciating him over the last few years, but I'll be the first to admit that the UFC certainly could use a guy like Brock Lesnar in their roster. And I really hope, and I'm praying that WWE doesn't snag him once again.
Leo, there's a term that we like to use for people like you that say that you're not a big Brock Lesnar fan. We like to call you haters. But I agree with David. Per Joe Rogan, Brock Lesnar was just born in the wrong century. He should have been born in the medieval times, where you will find him in the middle of a battlefield on the biggest horse with the biggest hammer, slaying numbers of people that just come in his way. This guy was built for competition. He was built for combat sports. Unfortunately, due to health issues that he had previously, and then the lure of the money that you could make in the WWE really took him away from the sport, and it just wasn't as big when he first came out of college. But Brock Lesnar, as you guys both said, there's something about him that draws people in, and it's not his fighting style. He's not that exciting of a fighter just on paper, but there's something about seeing a guy 6'4", 265 pounds plus. Obviously, I say 65 because that's the heavyweight limit. Just bulging muscles, the tattoo on the neck, the big blockhead, and just out there and looks like a mammoth out there. It will certainly be fun to see him back in the cage, especially if he kind of wants that swan song, one last hurrah, whether it's a fight against Kane, Overeem, you know, given as the current state of the UFC, maybe he could get an immediate title shot since he won his last fight. Who knows? And we've seen crazier things, GSP. So, or John Jones, it would be interesting. I personally would like to see one particular match, and it's got to do with Brock Lesnar and nobody on the roster. I would love to see it if Brock Lesnar was able to step in the cage, finally, against the other wrestler that turned pro MMA fighter, Bobby Lashley. Yeah, I know he's been in Bellator, you know, doesn't have the same big name, not as exciting. Just for the sure joy of being a wrestling fan myself, I would love to see two former collegiate champions, two former WWE champions, both turned pro MMA fighters. I would love to see those guys finally step in the cage across from one another. But according to Bobby Lashley, I'm not trying to throw any shade here, they may need to set that fight at an Indian resort somewhere for that fight to take place, if you get what I mean. Hint, hint. But we'll see how that all goes. Before we
also,
close out the show, go ahead.
If you want to make that matchup, I think you might want to put some tables and ladders underneath the octagon, because and perhaps maybe Vince McMahon will be the guest referee. I mean, if we're going all the way, we might as well go all the way with the freak show. And in an Indian casino of all places, I mean, it'd be perfect.
Okay, so we can have that, and then you know what? Just to throw it in there, in the middle of the match, they both knock each other down. They're both out, and then what happens? Cult of Personality hits. CM Punk comes to the ring, cashes in his Money in the Bank. It's a triple threat match, first time ever. I love where you're going with this, Leo. I absolutely love it, man. It could be something
Kurt Angle's going to make his UFC debut and just drop an elbow from the top of the cage.
And Batista will come back to the world of MMA for a one-off there. I'm telling you, man, UFC needs to talk to us about making matches here. We know what the fans want here. Speaking of making matches and knowing what the fans want, before we wrap up the show, there's two particular matchups I wanted to bring to your guys' attention. One, current lightweight contender Justin Gaethje, fresh off his first career loss against Eddie Alvarez, says he would like to fight Kevin Lee next in a matchup, stating he just likes punching loudmouths in the face, and Kevin Lee has no respect. Now, both of these fighters, Gaethje and Kevin Lee, both coming off of recent losses, Kevin Lee to Tony Ferguson in October, Justin Gaethje to Eddie Alvarez. So, okay, it makes sense. Gaethje's the fifth-ranked lightweight, Lee's the seventh, so they're close in that. 17-1, 16-3. These guys love to finish fights. They're very entertaining, and it would make for a pretty exciting matchup. I present this to you. Is this the matchup you guys would love to see, or maybe you try to go a different direction with both of these guys first before you set that up? Leo, what do you think?
I think, you know, these are both obviously contenders in the lightweight division. You know, even though they are coming off losses each, I think we've still got a lot to see out of both of these guys. And as much as I'd hate to see one of them knock each other out of contention, the fight is perfectly matched up. I'd love to see Gaethje and Kevin Lee go at it. I think certainly Gaethje would have the advantage in the stand-up game, and I'd love to see how his wrestling matches up against Kevin Lee. I think we do overlook Justin Gaethje's wrestling prowess, because he is such a brawler and a guy who's just willing to stand and bang, but he's a former collegiate wrestler, as is Kevin Lee, so it would certainly make for an interesting matchup. I'd love to see that fight, and hopefully that, you know, the UFC is going to book that one.
David, what about you?
Yeah, I think that fight does make a lot of sense, and it's funny, after the Kevin Lee and Tony Ferguson fight, I felt like that was such a huge fight for both of them, career-wise, and where do they both go, where does the loser of that fight go, you know, and so Kevin Lee obviously ended up losing that fight, and I thought, wow, you know, this is sort of each of their chances to make a big statement. Tony Ferguson was the one to make that big statement. Where does that leave Kevin Lee? And we haven't really heard much from him the past 3 months since he lost that fight. And, you know, we sort of were wondering, you know, what
what really is next for Kevin Lee. And I think Justin Gaethje does make sense, because Justin Gaethje looked impressive throughout his career until about a month ago. And he looked good against Eddie Alvarez. What a great fight that was. I mean, really, those are one of those fights where you don't want to see either guy lose. Obviously, Eddie Alvarez mustered up a little bit of energy. It took the tiniest bit of energy to knock out Justin Gaethje, and Eddie Alvarez got that second win. But, I think Kevin Lee's an exciting fighter. I think, I was looking forward to his return to the cage, and I think this fight makes absolute sense for both of them. And I think, what Leo said, I think it'd suck to see one of these guys knock each other out of contention, but I think this is sort of a fight that makes sense. I'm with Chael Sonnen, where I don't really like to see guys call out other fighters who aren't the champion, but, this fight does make a lot of sense for both of them. I think they're both at a point in their careers where a win over one another would be a big statement of moving forward. So, yeah, I'd like to see this fight, and let's see if Sean Shelby can get it done, because it does make sense.
It does make a lot of sense. I certainly believe that it will be entertaining just from a sales standpoint. A press conference, hopefully, is in order for it. And I would certainly love to see these two guys go at it. Gaethje is one who he's got a personality. It's not obviously it's not as loud as Kevin Lee, but he does have a personality to where he's not afraid to get out there and do some trash talking, not just for the sake of it, but just I believe that's how he naturally feels. And Kevin Lee, well, we all know Kevin Lee is the Russell Westbrook of mixed martial arts, not only from a dress standpoint, but from a personality standpoint. But he is fun to listen to and to watch as well. So it would definitely be an exciting matchup if and when they set that matchup. Certainly can't wait to see. Another one I wanted to bring to you guys' attention here, Tyron Woodley tells Rafael Dos Anjos, who clearly is the number two, potentially number one contender, if you want to take Thompson out of it, just for the sake that he's already lost twice to Woodley, or lost once, tied once with Woodley, so he probably won't be getting a title shot anytime soon. But Tyron Woodley says, you're wasting your time trying to navigate your way to a title shot here, making it almost as if RDA hasn't proven himself as a welterweight yet. This coming from the same guy who waited almost two full years for the welterweight title picture to clear up from before he got his shot, and he damn near went on an election type of presidential campaign for the title shot. A bit hypocritical that Tyron Woodley's taking this approach, considering that's kind of how he got a shot to get Robbie Lawler. David, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, because Tyron Woodley does a lot of lobbying for a lot of things besides his own title shot against Robbie Lawler, but I think RDA has looked so impressive. You can't deny the fact that what RDA has done at the welterweight division doesn't at least merit some conversation about him getting a title shot. After he beat Robbie a few weeks ago, I thought it was so impressive that RDA is the real deal, and he's been looking like the real deal throughout his time in the welterweight division. I think this reminds me a little bit of Connor, what he said about Habib's performance the other night, and it's just like, come on, you got to admit, this guy looks good, and maybe you just don't want to fight him. Maybe that's what it is. I can't see Tyron Woodley sort of denying a challenge, but I think Tyron Woodley's after big bucks right now, and he wants to fight Nick Diaz, and he wants to fight Connor or GSP, and RDA just doesn't get him those big bucks. So I think Tyron Woodley doesn't want to fight RDA because it's just not in the best interests of his bank account. I think RDA is pretty clear-cut in the welterweight division where he stands. He's looked very impressive. Maybe he gets the next crack at the belt. I'm not sure. Stephen Thompson wants to fight RDA next. But I know Tyron Woodley, he wants the big fights. He wants the big money fights, and he hasn't had much luck getting them. So, of course, maybe he just wants to sit and wait and see what he can sort of fish out of these bigger names. So I don't blame Tyron Woodley for doing that, but I don't exactly agree with him down talking RDA at the same time. But what else are you going to do?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, I don't necessarily like how Tyron Woodley's going about it, but I got to say that I kind of get it because, I mean, we saw this guy, he was champion for maybe half a second, and in the Octagon interview after he becomes champion, he's already calling out for money fights. He's calling for Nick Diaz and George St. Pierre and all these other guys that are just going to make his bank account bigger and not necessarily wanting to fight the guys in the welterweight queue for title shots. But he has been doing that. He has been defending the titles, and I think he just kind of wants to stir the water a little bit and try to make, you know, the best possible matchups for his wallet, not necessarily him defending against the top contender. So I kind of get it, but at the same time, these guys don't put themselves in the position that they were a few years ago when they were begging and, you know, basically on their knees begging for title shots. And now these other guys are in the same position and they're kind of, you know, wanting to steer away from those clear contenders. So, I mean, I get it from a money standpoint, but at the same time, you have an obligation to the division once you're a champion. So if the number one contender is a clear number one contender, as is the case in Rafael Dos Anjos, I really don't think there is much for you to say unless you're kind of moving up and fighting other super fights for other titles. You just have to defend the title. And I think RDA is more than a deserving contender at this point, and he should be the next in line. I don't really see much of a case for Tyron Woodley to be denying RDA a title shot.
You know, the idea of going after the money fights does make sense to a certain degree, but here's what I don't understand. You're trying to use other fighters' names, status, and reputation to get yourself a big money fight, but you don't want any fighter to use your name, status, and reputation for a big money fight. Tyron Woodley is not a big draw. He's not a big name. He's not someone that fans are clamoring to see. He's just not. And I think it's because of some of the things that happened when he were doing the press junket against Stephen Thompson, and then obviously his last couple fights haven't been the most fan-friendly fights to watch. So it certainly has been unfortunate because he's got a good personality. He's got a tremendous look, not just physically, but he's an analyst. He talks well. He knows what he's talking about. It's not like he's just out there jibber-jabbering his way through. Tremendous athlete, very one of the hardest hitters in the division. But I just think mentally he's gone about things the wrong way and has dug himself further and further into a hole. And then, like you guys said, especially Leo, you win the title. You clamored for a year and a half, 2 years to get a title shot. You finally get it. The first thing you do without defending it, you want GSP, you want Diaz, you want McGregor. You even said you go to 185 fight Bisping. Hey, would you fight Colby Covington? No. I don't want that fight. Would you fight Rafael Dos Anjos? No. I don't want that fight. Well, who the hell do you want to fight? Diaz is retired. GSP may or may not come back. Conor McGregor is probably going to take on somebody else before you, bud. Michael Bisping just lost, so that's out the window. Who exactly are you waiting for here? So, you know, for Woodley, I definitely would like to see him be kind of take his own words and use them, apply them as well. And you know what? You want to get those big money fights? You got to also prove that you can carry your weight as well. That's one of the things I respect about Floyd Mayweather. For the most part, when he became a big name, he tried not to fight so many guys that didn't have a big name to carry his matches, that couldn't carry his matchups against him. Hey, you need to pull your weight as well, and that's something that Tyron Woodley has to do on his end. Guys,
I think
for the first show,
just one more thing about Tyron Woodley. I think, you know, if you remember his title shot against Robbie Lawler, he said leading up to the fight, he had no incentive to do any promotion because he wasn't getting paid for pay-per-view points. So he basically did as little as possible in terms of promotion. Well, that's really not helping his case because he's not really putting his names in the ears of fans. So I think he's kind of a selfish fighter in a sense. I mean, he'll sell what he wants to sell, but not necessarily help other fighters get as big as he is. He's not necessarily becoming his own money fight. He just wants to build his name off other people. And it's weird how he was willing to take a fight, a theoretical fight against Nate Diaz this past weekend. But when the Nate Diaz fight falls through, all of a sudden he's got shoulder surgery, so he can't defend the title for a few months. So I think he just kind of shoots himself in the foot. He does have everything to become a superstar, but he just, as you said, he goes about it the wrong way, and fans respond in turn. So I think he really does, you know, paint himself into a bad corner. Yeah, he paints himself into a bad corner, and at this point, you just have to defend the title and become your own big money fight.
First show of the year, guys. We knocked it out the park. Can't thank you guys enough for joining me once again. Can't wait. Tune in next week inside the Octagon from 4 to 5:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Till then, everybody, be safe and have a good one. Peace.
People look at you strange, saying you changed, like you worked that hard to stay the same, like you're doing all this for a reason. And what happens most of the time, people change. People change around you because they start treating you different because of your success.
We the best music.
Another one.
Ever since the nigga hit the top, put the niggas wanna see me in the box. They don't love you no more. They don't love you no more.
Shit ain't been the same since I came through when they had shit. They gon' talk about that you ain't got shit. They gon' talk about that when you got shit. All eyes on me, come on my pop shit. Y'all rap niggas on some pop shit. I been ducking paparazzi with a pop bitch. Glock 30 in the cockpit.